So we have been looking at kind of an ongoing narrative for the last couple months, and we're going to be jumping back in. So at the start of December, we were looking at a guy named Saul. Now, Saul was the first king of Israel, and at that point in time, the nation of Israel, they kind of looked around at all of the other nations, and they decided that they wanted a king, just like everybody else had. God kind of warned them what would happen if they were ruled by a king, but the more they cried out, eventually God gave them Saul. Now, Saul had his ups and his downs, as we heard from Jeff back in the start of December. He had his moments where he seemed to be humbling himself before God, following God's will, but ultimately, we saw that Saul let his fear get the best of him, and he did not obey the Lord. So where Pastor Jeff ended the narrative last time was 1 Samuel 15. So as we read in 1 Samuel 15, 28, "And Samuel said to him," that's Saul, "the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today and has given it to somebody else, one who is better than you." Now, this is the point that I get to pick up and carry on, which is great because I get to introduce you guys to one of my favorite people in Old Testament literature. Today, we're going to be looking at the anointing of David as the new king of Israel, and we're going to be looking at what's probably become one of my single favorite accounts, you could call it, in the Old Testament, which is David versus Goliath. So David, you know, David's a really interesting guy, and the account of David and Goliath is if you read it, very fast-paced, it's very dynamic, and it's very entertaining. But I think that some of the things David had going on kind of around that time are worth looking at as well. So today we're going to be covering just two chapters. We're going to look at 1 Samuel 16 and 17. And if you haven't read them yet, I would encourage you to go back, read them for yourself, and see what God is doing through this. So let's pick up where we left off with Saul, and then we're going to move towards David. So 1 Samuel 15, 35 into 16, 1. "Samuel never went to meet with Saul again, but he mourned constantly for him. And the Lord was sorry that he ever made Saul king of Israel. Now the Lord said to Samuel, 'You have mourned long enough for Saul. I have rejected him as king of Israel. So fill your flask with olive oil and go to Bethlehem. Find a man named Jesse who lives there, for I have selected one of his sons to be my king.'" Samuel had watched the rise and the fall of Saul. You know, he'd done what he could do to equip Saul to follow the Lord's commands, to warn Saul to try and choose humility over pride. But in the end, Saul let his own image become greater than his reverence for God, and he let his fear of man become a snare. Saul was supposed to be Samuel's replacement. Samuel was the judge over Israel at that point in time, and he was already old by the time that God appointed Saul. So by the time that God rejected Saul, Samuel was, well, he was really old, actually. I think this lends to why Samuel is grieving so hard at the start of chapter 16. Samuel's two sons had already fallen short of the mantle of judge over Israel, and Saul, Samuel's God-appointed replacement, was more or less a complete flop, right? So God tells Samuel, "Load up, go see Jesse the Bethlehemite, because the next king is one of his sons." So in 1 Samuel 16, 6 through 12, we get to meet David. So when they arrived, Samuel took one look at Eliab and thought, "Well, surely this is the Lord's anointed." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Don't judge by his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not see things the way that you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then Jesse told his son Abinadab to step forward and to walk in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, "This is not the one the Lord has chosen." Next, Jesse summoned Shimeah, but Samuel said, "Neither is this the one the Lord has chosen." In the same way, all seven of Jesse's sons were presented to Samuel. But Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen any of these." Then Samuel asked, "Are these all of the sons that you have?" "Well, they're still the youngest," Jesse replied, "but he's out in the field watching the sheep and the goat." "Well, send for him at once," Samuel said. "We'll not sit down and eat until he arrives." So Jesse sent for him. He was dark and handsome and had beautiful eyes. And the Lord said, "This is the one. Anoint him." See, God told Samuel that one of Jesse's sons was going to be the next king over Israel. So when Samuel gets to Bethlehem, what does he do? He immediately assumes that because Saul was big and strong that the next king probably should be as well. Right? He sees Eliab when Eliab enters the room, and Samuel's just convinced right away. He's like, nah, this is the guy. This is him. In verse 6, it says, when they arrived, Samuel took one look at Eliab and thought, surely this is the Lord's anointed. He didn't even talk to the guy, right? He just sees him walk in, and he's like, there he is. But God had a different plan. In verse 7, it says, but the Lord said to Samuel, don't judge by his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. See, Samuel was looking for another Saul. He was looking for somebody who was large in stature, somebody who looked like a warrior. But God was looking for somebody with a humble heart, somebody with a meek demeanor, and somebody with a faith that could actually stand up to adversity. So as Jeff said, I'm in school right now, and so I learned a new word recently, and I'm going to share it with you guys because I really like it, and I think that it applies to this talk. So my new word that I learned is Christophany. Okay? Now, a Christophany is a foreshadow or a reflection of Christ. In other words, it is a representation of Christ, often referring to Old Testament literature. I think that David is a really strong representation of the coming Christ. Now, don't take that the wrong way. I know David had his flaws. He had some times where he messed up. I don't want to say that. But David was also called a man after God's own heart, and you don't get called that lightly. So as we move through the rest of our story, I want us to try and pick up a few main points that highlight David as a Christophany. A representation of Christ. Now, there's more than just the ones that we're going to look at, but I want to keep it a short list. So we're going to be looking for the preparation of a young boy from Bethlehem. We're going to look at a giant's boast and the inconspicuous Savior. Okay? So let's jump back into our story. Israel's in a bit of a mess, and they don't really know it, right? God knows that they're in a mess. Samuel knows that they're in a mess, and Saul knows, but the rest of the nation doesn't realize that their God-given leader, Saul, has actually fallen out of God's favor. As far as they're concerned, Saul's actually doing great, right? He's their warrior king, and he has led them to victory after victory on the battlefield. In those days, there was no shortage of battles to be fought. So 1 Samuel 17, 1 through 4, now the Philistines mustered their army for battle, and they camped between Soho in Judah and Azekah at Ephistimim. Saul countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the valley of Elah. So the Philistines and the Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with a valley between them. Then Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. So we've probably heard a little bit of this story before, but Goliath, the Philistine giant, he comes out and he utters a taunt and a challenge to Israel. So carrying on down in verse 8, Goliath stood and he shouted a taunt across to the Israelites. Why are you all coming out to fight? He called. I'm the Philistine champion, but you are only servants of Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then you will be or we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man who will fight me. Now when Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply shaken. Now, if you were here back at the start of December when Pastor Jeff introduced Saul, you might remember a little bit about how he was described. 1 Samuel 10, 23 to 24, so they found him, that's Saul, and they brought him out. Remember, he was hiding in the baggage racks and trying to not be there when he was anointed. And he, that's Saul, stood a head and shoulders above everyone else. Then Samuel said to all the people, this is the man the Lord has chosen as your king. No one in all Israel is like him. And the people shouted, long live the king. Saul was supposed to be Israel's hero. When Goliath came out and called a taunt and a challenge to Israel, it was a call for Saul. Israel's giant was supposed to come out and fight for them. But Saul let his fear get the best of him, and he shrunk away from a battle that was rightfully his. Now, it's easy for me to relate to Saul in this instance because when there is a challenge that is bigger than me, bigger than what I think I can do, my natural tendency is to want to back down, to shrink, and to hide and act like it's somebody else's problem. I want to just stay silent. And if I can do that for long enough, maybe somebody else will step up and answer that call. Does anybody else struggle with that sometimes? Is that just me? Amen. There we go. Hey, great times. I like it. So let's carry on with the story. So one day, David's father, Jesse, he sends David to Saul's camp to go check on his brothers. David arrives just as everybody's kind of gathering, lining up for battle with the Philistines. They're all in their battle formations, and David just kind of slips into the ranks to go find his brother, or his brothers, rather. And so when David's there, he hears the taunting of Goliath, and he watches as the whole army of Israel shrinks in fear of one man, of Goliath. And he hears the army start to whisper among themselves. In 1 Samuel 17:25 to 27, "Have you seen this giant?" the man asked. "He comes out each day to defy Israel. The king has offered a huge reward to anybody who can kill him. He will give the man one of his daughters for a wife, and the man's entire family will be exempt from paying taxes." David asked the soldiers standing nearby, "What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God?" And these men gave David the same reply. They said, "Yes, that is the reward for killing him." Down in verse 30, he, that's David, walked over to some others and he asked them the same thing and received the same answer. So when I was reading this, I got to be honest, I found this part really funny because it seems like there's this huge disconnect between what David is asking and how the people are responding. David is asking about ending the defiance of Israel. He's asking about restoring the Lord's honor, but everybody else seems to be concerned with material gain or temporal gain if they could just defeat Goliath. Right? Saul has essentially tried bribing his army to go out and fight his fight, and it almost seems to be working, if not for fear. So we're going to power through some verses, and let's watch what happened. 1 Samuel 17:31 to 43. "Then David's question was reported to King Saul, and the king sent for him. 'Don't worry about this Philistine,' David told Saul. 'I'll go fight him.' 'Don't be ridiculous,' Saul replied. 'There's no way that you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy, and he has been a man of war since his youth.' But David persisted, 'I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats. When a lion or a bear comes to steal the flock, I go after it with a club and I rescue it from the mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and I club it to death. I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it again to this pagan Philistine too, for he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine.' Saul finally consented. 'All right, go ahead, and may the Lord be with you.' Then Saul gave David his own armor, a bronze helmet and a coat of mail. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he had never worn such things before. 'I can't go in these,' he protested. 'I'm not used to them.' So David took them off again, and he picked up 5 smooth stones from the stream. He put them into his shepherd's bag. Then, armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Now Goliath walked out towards David with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. 'Am I a dog,' he roared, 'that you come at me with a stick?' And he cursed David by the name of his gods." Carrying on down to verse 48, "As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. Reaching into his shepherd's bag and taking out a stone, he hurled it with his sling and hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with only a sling and a stone, for he had no sword. Then David ran over, pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath, used it to kill him, and cut off his head." There we go. We got through it. Yeah, that's a lot of reading. So this account absolutely captures my imagination. I love this story. I hear it, I read it, and if I close my eyes, like, I can almost picture it, right? It's such a fascinating story, and there's so much that's happening here. But the challenge for us, for all of us here at CRBC today, is what do we do with this? What does an account like this have to do with us, right? We're probably not going to line up against the Philistines anytime soon. So for the last couple months, we have been diving into history, or his story, right? And we've been looking at three threads that have woven themselves through all of the encounters that we've covered. The first one is that God is up to something, right? He's restoring the peace that was lost in the garden. The second one is that Satan is also up to something. He is trying to destroy God's peace. And the third one is that without God's amazing grace and power, we naturally move away from God. And I think that this whole exchange from Saul over to David and then David versus Goliath really shows these three threads clearly. The first one is Saul. Saul is the picture of what it looks like to walk away from God. Saul let his pride and his fear get the best of him. He let it cloud his judgment, and eventually he walked away from God's way of doing life, and he lost God's blessing. The next one is Goliath, the champion of the Philistines. Can you guess which thread he might be? Goliath drove almost the whole nation of Israel into a state of fear and panic. He destroyed peace, and he was stirring up discord. That is what Satan does. Finally, we have the last thread, the scarlet thread. God is up to something. So back at the start of my talk, I said we were going to look for a couple main points that highlight or showcase David as a Christophany, as a representation of Jesus Christ. So the first point that we were going to look for was the preparation of a young boy from Bethlehem. Now, David was essentially a nobody at that point in time. He was the youngest son of a family from the little town of Bethlehem. He was the family shepherd, and shepherds in that culture were the bottom of the pile, right? It was not a good job to have. But it was through that low position that God taught David how to look after those in his care, how to trust God for deliverance. As a shepherd, David had to fight for his sheep. Back in chapter 17, verse 34 and 36, David had to face some formidable challenges like lions and bears, which is why I really like how David responds a little farther down in verse 38 and 40 when Saul is trying to equip David for battle against Goliath. Right? Saul tries to get David to wear all the armor and to use a sword, and you know, he said, go do battle the normal way, David. Go do it that way. Down in verse 38 and 40, Saul gave David his own armor, a bronze helmet, and a coat of mail. David put it on, strapped the sword over it, and took a step or two to see what it was like, for he'd never worn such things. I can't go in these, he protested. I'm not used to them. So David took them off again. And he picked up the 5 smooth stones from the stream, put them into his shepherd's bag, and then armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. That's really important that we see this. David was not trusting in the ways of the world to fight this battle. Right? Everybody around David was already geared up for war. They had their armor. They had their bows and swords and shields and spears. They had all of that. David had the Lord. He relied on the Lord, and he trusted the Lord with what he had been shown instead of trusting in the ways of those around him. Right? David casts off every piece of equipment, and then David fought with the knowledge of what God had already done and with faith in what God was about to do. So there's somebody else that came from the little town of Bethlehem. There's somebody else who was meek and humble and who trusted God the Father with life and death. All right, somebody who did things a little different than those around him. For the last number of weeks, we've been covering the Christmas story, the birth of Jesus in a manger in Bethlehem, the King of Kings who was born in a barn, who laid to sleep in a manger, the one who came with all power and authority, who humbled himself to walk beside us and to show us what it looks like to walk in faith. The next point that we're going to look for is a giant's boast. So we talked about the three threads that have been running through history, that have been woven through all of the encounters. And one of those was that Satan is up to something. He's trying to destroy God's peace. Satan taunts and boasts about the power of sin and death on our lives. Now, for 40 days straight, Goliath stood up to the whole army of Israel and he mocked them, right? He mocked their king, he mocked their God, and nobody dared stand up to him. The whole nation, the whole army of Israel was crippled by fear, except for David. David answered Goliath's taunt and he silenced it once and for all. David answered Goliath's challenge, not because he was concerned with material gain or value or anything like that, simply because he could not stand the reproach that hung over Israel from the boasting of a giant. David had to step into that gap and fight for God's glory. Right? David answered the boast of the giant Goliath. Who had the answer to the boast of sin and death? Who stepped into the gap for us? Lastly is the inconspicuous Savior. David was not who anybody expected, right? He was the little shepherd from the little farm, from the little town. He didn't look the way that people thought he should look, and he didn't fight the way that people thought he should fight in order for him to be able to step up and deliver Israel. In 1 Samuel 17:33, "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way that you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy. He's been a man of war since his youth." When Goliath saw David in 1 Samuel 17:42, it says that he was sneering in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. Everybody saw David as this little ruddy youth. Now, if you've read through the whole story, David's actually described as ruddy many times over. He had that kind of healthy, unassuming, rosy-cheeked, boyish kind of look to him, right? Even back when David was anointed, it was Eliab that Samuel thought should have got the blessing. Everybody saw David as this little boy. But God sees and does things different than we do. It was David, the little shepherd boy from Bethlehem, the inconspicuous youth who fought and delivered Israel from the boasting of the giant Goliath. And it was Christ, the inconspicuous carpenter from Bethlehem, who lived the perfect sinless life, who answered the boast of sin on our lives. He died on a cross and he raised to life 3 days later, defeating death once and for all. In Romans 6, 9 through 12, it says, or 9 through 10, it says, "We are sure of this because Christ was raised from the dead, and he will never die again. Death no longer has any power over him. When he died once to break the power of sin. But now that he lives for the glory of God." David fought for the glory of God, right? The battle of David and Goliath was a picture of what Christ was coming to do. But David is also an example to us of what it looks like to live and walk and thrive in faith. David took courage by looking at what God had already done in his life in order to trust in what God was about to do. For us here today, there is a Goliath that stands and shouts and tries to drive us back into a fear-filled existence. Right? In my own life, I know I have heard the boasting and the taunting of a giant. Has anybody else? Has anybody ever heard that? I've shared this with some of my youth before and my youth leaders, but I don't know if many of you guys have heard this, so for myself, for many, many years, I struggled with a hidden drug addiction that had a crippling grip on my life, right? Many times I tried to rally my own strength, my own courage to stand up and face it. I was like the Israelites drawing up in battle lines against the Philistines. I would make up my mind and I would say, you know, today is the day, no more. I would make a whole bunch of noise, rattle my armor, beat my chest. Every time that I did, my giant just laughed and roared its threats of exposing me to my loved ones, and I shrunk back in fear. I tried everything I could think of, everything within my own power to try and fight that addiction, to try and stand up, but I could never win. I was at a point in my life where I was ready to give up hope. I was ready to give up my life to that giant that I finally backed down and let Christ step into the arena of battle in my life. And the amazing gift of Christ is that we don't have to fight by ourselves. Jesus Christ has come. He has paid that price, and he has already given us the victory over that boast of sin and death, right? I get to stand up here with all of you and talk because Christ stepped into that gap in my life, because he paid the price for my life, and because he fought the battle that I could never fight. Right? Thanks. Everybody here today has their own story. Everybody has their own struggles and their own trials. We all have giants in our lives that roar for battle and try and force us back into that fear-filled existence. But God is up to something. John 16:33 says, "I have told you all this so that you may have peace in me. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart because I have overcome the world." Oh, last slide here. My wife found this picture, and I think it is a wonderful illustration for this topic. At the start, when you saw it, you may have thought kind of some preconceived notions about what that represented, but I want to tell you that our God is way bigger than any Goliath or any giant that tries to drive us down. You can have victory over those giants if you authentically and humbly choose to give your heart to Jesus and let him step into your battle.